302 Benson interview. Mr. Benson, do you wish to comment further on the soil conservation program?
Yes, there's one thing that I would like to say about the soil conservation part of the ACP program. I believe at the present time that we are funneling the money into long-time prevention of the soil, when actually the land that is producing the crops that we need, the crops that we feed, the crops that we feed the livestock, and the crops that we eat, and the production of any kind of a crop that is being produced for market, that is the land that is the most important land, it's the most valuable land, and it is the land that should receive treatment more than the other land, because it is the land that we actually get our food and fiber from. And it will always be the same land until we wear it out. Mm-hmm. And if we don't replace these things, and we're up against the losing proposition over a period of years, because eventually land will get poorer if we don't put back into it what we take out. If we take the minerals out, if we take the phosphate, and we take the limestone, the nitrogen, and the food elements that are in it, and we take it out and do not replace it, it's gone, and it's gone forever. But if we replace it now, if we replace it as we use it, we'll have better vegetables, we'll have better corn, we'll have better wheat, we'll have better crops of every kind. And that is the land that should be taken care of first, and then take care of our pasture land. And the other, I don't say not to take care of the pasture land and the woods and the like of that, because they're important too. But the land that produces our food is the most important land that we have. And I know that they say that the cropland on the earth is very small portion per person in comparison to the land that will not produce food. I forget just exactly what the proportion is, but it is a very, very small amount of land that is considered cropland that will produce food to support our people. And the rest of it is arid, mm-hmm. mountainous, marshy, desert, and will not produce it. Mm-hmm. And we've got to take care of what we got. It's all we got, and it's all we're ever going to have. Mm-hmm. And if we squander it and waste it and let it wash away and not take care of that, this good crop land, the land that's producing the crops now, will gradually get poorer unless we put something back in it. And it should be done, and like I said a while ago, I think it is the responsibility of the whole country to see that that natural resource is taken care of, because it is not something that we ship away. It's something that is here, it will always be here, and it is only the farmers for the length of time that he owns it. He has a title to it, and he works it for that little length of time. But it actually belongs to every living soul that's in this country. They have an interest in it, or a big interest, whether they know it or not. If they would stop to think of where their clothes come from, where their food comes from, everything that they eat, or they wear, or they ride on or in, mm-hmm. comes right from the ground. That was it.
Extremely important natural resource.
It's the most important natural resource we got. Mm-hmm. We got two natural resources, and the two most important are our people, mm-hmm. and the other is our land. And that land, the crop land, mm-hmm. the land that will produce is what supports the people.
Okay, good.
So therefore, the both should be taken care of.
Mr. Benson, how important has Kenton County been as an agricultural county and state?
Well, over the years, it's been pretty important as an agricultural county. For one thing, it's been a big dairy county. Has produced a lot of milk for the people in the greater Cincinnati area. And then another thing, it has produced a lot of revenue in the form of tobacco. Now we think in the form of tobacco as being a small thing as far as Kenton County is concerned, and it is small in comparison with other counties. But when you stop to think that the total amount of money brought into this county to the farmers amounts to around $1 million or $1.5 million, which will be spent in Covington and Florence and Cincinnati and these little, our local area here, it amounts to a whole lot of money. Mm-hmm. On top of that, the tobacco industry is something like a $10 billion industry. And we contribute our little share of it. Now Boone County next to it, I think they've produced something like over $2 million, $2.5 million. Mm-hmm. Ours goes over $1.5 million. Now that's cash dollars. It's money. It's not in the form of goods or anything else. It's cash money that's being placed here, and it's going to go into our, it's going to be used to buy clothes, to buy automobiles, to buy most any of the things that are on the market. And that is a big contribution by agriculture in that respect. Now, as far as our beef cattle are concerned, it is not a big industry in this county, although we do have something like maybe 35 or 40 herds of cattle that are in the county that run anywhere from maybe 20 up to 50 or 60 head of cattle. I know that's small in comparison with a lot of other places. But the big crops, as far as this county is concerned, is the amount of money that is derived from tobacco, and then the vegetable crops. At one time, not now, but at one time, Crescent Springs area of Kenton County was one of the big vegetable producing areas in this northern part of the state. And they grew corn and beans, bunch of beans, fruit crops, like they had grapes, they had plums, they had apples, peaches. Some of them are still in existence. Some of them are still operating, mm-hmm. but not on the scale that it was at one time. But there were fellows in the Crescent Springs area that didn't own over, I'd say, anywhere from 2 to 10 or maybe up to a big farm, that were making a living off of that 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 acres. And they were selling vegetables. Mm-hmm. Sold it on the market there in Covington and the market in Cincinnati. I was told the 12th Street Market, and then you had your 11th Street Market, and then they also ran routes. Mm-hmm. And then they sold to commercial dealers. I remember for example, Carl Foltz, not Carl, but Frank, produced rhubarb, had 17 acres of it, mm-hmm. and he sold to the Bluebird Pie Company. Mm-hmm. And all those little pies that were scattered around over the country, a lot of that came right from Frank Foltz's farm.
That's interesting.
Yes. And then I remember the orchards, Scott's Orchards. Scott is in the chicken business now. And then I remember the Eubanks' Orchards. And the vegetables that were grown, there was a fellow by the name of Gibson, I believe. And Stanley Nagler was a man that grew a lot of vegetables and marketed. All of them came through. Well, I guess you know that community, though. You're. Mm-hmm. You know of that part of it.
Can you think of any other farmers such as Frank Foltz who stand out like that as selling specialty crops?
Oh yeah, the Tosis Poultry Farm was one. He has made a, he has a big operation there, John Tosis. Very progressive farmer. And Scott with his eggs, Bob Scott.
Bob Scott, where's he located?
Bob Scott's located on Amsterdam Road.
Oh, okay.
Amsterdam Pike. He produced, I don't know. Well, you, if you go around to your grocery store, you'll see Scott's eggs in all of them. You notice the next time that you're out. You look at the stores, it's got Scott's eggs in.
Okay.
And well, it's hard to point out different farmers that make a big contribution. It's now we've got two dairy farmers right here in this. No, we just got one now. Raymond Mufala down here, who produces, I don't know how much milk he does produce, but he's milking a lot of cows. And he's been in the business now for the last 15, 20 years. Ed Helmer was in the business for a long, long time. Big dairy producer, Carl Foltz, who's a big dairy producer. Reckford used to be the big dairy producer. I don't know his, I don't remember his first name. But he was a big dairy producer.
Did you say Reckford?
Reckford. R-E-Q-U-A-R-D-T. I'll tell you where the house is. You know where Summit Hills Hunter Club is?
Yeah.
If you look off to your left as you're going toward Dixie Highway from 3L, there's a great big square house. It's brick, it's three-story high, and to the best of my recollection, it's still standing. Now, he owned that land in there, and he produced a lot of milk. And then, who was the other fellow there? Stinkins. Stankins, Fred Common. Fred Common was a big dairy producer. He sold his farm to Thomas Moore College.
Mm-hmm.
That's where it is right now. That part of that is his farm, Fred's farm. He was a big dairy. And I'm trying to think of that that other fellow down in Maryville. It's all a subdivision now. Oh, he's part of it. His name is on part of the dairy.
Radman?
Well, I remember Frank Radman, but this is not the man. We know there's a Troth Dairy Incorporated, and then there's another dairy down there in Covington. What is it called?
Hannigan?
No, I know Hannigan. Not Hannigan.
Tears?
No, no, you're talking about Charlie Tears?
Yes.
No, it wasn't Charlie. Oh, come on. Common. Joe, no, this is Joe Common. Joe Common. Well, I'll tell you, on the left-hand side of Dudley Pike, what is now Whispering Woods or whatever it is, that whole thing in there was his farm, 200 and some odd acres of land, and he and his son operated it. That was Joe Common and Vincent. Well, Benson, I don't know where Benson lives now. Most of those fellows moved on down into Boone County and bought them. Another farm.
Mm-hmm.
But all of those fellows were big contributors to score as very concerned.
Was this Common Farm on Dudley Pike? Or
yes, Dudley.
At the, toward the 3L Highway?
No, it's more toward the it's more toward the other end. It's back this way from the Summit Hills Country Club, and it's off on the left. There's a group of houses in there. They're built all over it now. Go back.
Yes,
yes.
East Turkey.
Yes, it's easy to pick. And then was that your granddad, John Bowe, that was right at the top of the hill there?
Collins Road. He was at Collins Road.
Well, Collins Road was old and crusty friends, but yeah. There was a Bowe lived right at the top of the hill on Dudley Pike as you go up from 3L Highway. Right at the top of the hill, they were in an area right there. And his name was there.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I don't know what his first name was, mm-hmm. but his name was there. There were dairymen across there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there was quite a few of them. All of those fellows contributed to the... and then as far as your tobacco people that are in the county contributed tobacco, a lot of those fellows were dead and gone, but there was a fellow by the name of George Flynn that contributed a lot as far as tobacco was grown. You can name all of your good tobacco growers on about 10 things. Seabreeze was another good tobacco grower. Well, Mary Rich down there had the distinction of having one of the highest yields of anybody in the county. She lived on Rich Road. But there was the back of the county. I suppose you'd say there was a lot of people.
In the south,
the southern end of the county that contributed to tobacco. Of course, see, this end of the county was all tobacco. That end of the county up there was all vegetable and dairy.
North end.
The north end of the county.
Mr. Benson, tell us a little bit about the farm organizations that have existed in Kenton County.
Well, now we have Kenton County Farm Bureau, and the Kenton County Farm Bureau is a very active organization, and I would like to say that they have worked in full cooperation with us on practically all of the ventures that we ran. They backed us, and they backed the different things that were recommended from this county. It was very cooperative. And even from the time of Hayden Ware up to the time of Bill Durr, who is now, I guess you would call him the executive in the county as far as the, I don't know what his title is, but he's in charge of it. And I can remember Hayden Ware, who was in it for years, and they always cooperated in every way. And of course your 4-H club organizations, I think they contributed a lot to the young people of the county and the teaching the young people on the growing of different kinds of crops and the growing of different kinds of crops and the girls, the organization, what did they call them? Future homemakers. And they taught the girls to sew, and they taught them to cook. They taught that organization has done a good job. And then you had the Future Farmers of America. That was that's down here at Simon Kenton. It's generally under the direction of a person that has an agricultural degree, and they're hired by the state and the county both, and they teach classes to boys in high school and any girl that want to go to that. And let me see, that's three organizations that are involved. Then they had at one time the NFO came into the county, and they organized some, and there are some fellows that are still active in the NFO. I don't know a lot about the NFO, so I'm not qualified to say whether they've done good or not.
Mm-hmm.
But I do know that there are some members in the county in the NFO.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we do have our cooperative associations. We've got the Bi-County Farm Bureau, which is located over on Dixie Highway, and then we have Southern States, which is located here in the county, which of course is a non-profit organization that pays dividends back to its people who are dependent on the amount of money that they have spent with them after they pay all of their expenses. And I think all of those things are good.
Mm-hmm.
All of them are progressive. You had your rural electrification that actually put electricity into the county. And to begin with, we had no electricity. And I'll say the farming area surrounding Independence and then all out here was coal oil lamps or land lamps or something like that until the rural electric started. And when rural electric started, then CG&E began to build lines out in here. So, as a result, that organization has brought electricity to this end of the county.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's fully covered, both by REA and what is covered by REA is Union Lady and Carpenter.
Mm-hmm.
So that all of those things have happened in the time that we observed here. I know the first washing machine that we had was just a gasoline motor, and that was in 36, and my wife washed on just a plain old washboard before that. And then we didn't get electricity until 1936. And after we got electricity, well, then of course we didn't get some of the other businesses that you find in practically every home. Now,
the cooperatives and the REA, that was, these were public organizations.
That's right, they were public organizations.
Mm-hmm.
And then your, of course, your 4-H, and your Future Farmers of America, and your Farm Bureau, all were local things. And your F, no one of your Future Farmers of America was not local, it was in, put in a lot of schools.
Mm-hmm.
Up to, but your 4-H and your Farm Bureau have been very active. And on the ladies' side too, the, what do they call them, home demonstration agents, they had them.
Yeah.
And they were pretty active in the county. All of it put together has helped the county to grow and be better, as far as I can see. The county is much, much different right now than it was, I'll say, 35 years ago when I started working. Not taught school 7 years before that.
Uh-huh. Mr. Benson, how did you get along with farmers that came into your office and farmers that you came into contact with over the years? What were some of the...
Well, over the years, I think I got along very well with the farmers. I think I can safely say that I don't have any enemies over the farm program, like that. If I do have, I don't know who they are. But now there have been, there were times back during the Depression when it was pretty rough and people had no money at all. And 100 of tobacco, people would actually fight over who was to get the 100 of an acre of tobacco because they were so in desperate need of money. And I have had men come into the office that actually were fighting mad. I remember one fellow who came in, and he was so mad that he put his hands down on the desk. There was actually tears in his eyes. And he said, somebody's going to pay for this. He had lost 1/10 of an acre of tobacco due to a federal cut, and he didn't think that he'd been treated fairly. And actually, I thought the man was going to, I actually did think he was going to reach over and grab me. So I just put my hands against the desk and just scooted the chair back so he couldn't reach me. And he stood there and talked, and he called me Peck, he knew me well. And he said something had to be done. They just absolutely wasn't going to put up with anything like that. So I just let him talk and talk till he talked himself out. And when he got through, I said to him, well, I'll tell you what we'll do. I'll make an appointment with you to meet with the county committee. And you come in and talk to the county committee and let them explain to you all about it and see how it turned out. All right, he said, we'll do that. And I did. I made an appointment for him with the county committee, and he came in and he talked to them, and he knew all of the county committee. There were local farmers, men that he knew, and by the time they got through and they had explained to him, then he was satisfied. And he went away satisfied that he had been treated fairly. And I think that if you handle people like that, you don't have trouble. Because after all, when they come into the office and they're mad and they're upset about something, somebody has to listen to them. And if you ignore them or if you shut them off, you hurt yourself more than you hurt them. And then we had experiences with people who would hide tobacco. Now, I can recall a case of the fact that the man's tobacco had been measured, I believe at the time, I don't remember just exactly what his allotment was, but it was about 4 acres, and his tobacco had been measured, and it had actually been spot checked, that is, by somebody else going around. Later on, we discovered that he had an acre of tobacco in the center of a cornfield. It was observed from a barn where they were hanging tobacco and could look out across and see the tobacco. So we revisited the farm, sent a man back to see. And he asked him all about the tobacco, and he asked the fella, he said, is this all the tobacco that you have? And he said, yes, this is all the tobacco that I have. And he said to him, he said, well, you know, we take aerial photographs. And it says the aerial photographs show a patch of tobacco back here on your farm, back on this ridge. Is there one back there? And the fellow dropped his head and he said, yes, there is. He said, well, I found a little dab of tobacco and I'll let her have it. Well, he said, we'll have to go measure. So it went, they measured it, there was an acre of it. And that afternoon that man was to see me and talk to me what he could do. And of course,
Reel 2, Side 2, Willard Benson Interview.
That afternoon, the man came to see me about the tobacco. He told me the whole story. He said, I shouldn't have done it. And he said, the tobacco is there. What are we going to do with it? Well, I said, there's only one thing that you can do right now. I said, you can either pay the penalty and take whatever the consequences are, or you can go in there and destroy the whole business and we'll observe the destruction. And he says, that's what I'll do, and that's what he did. But he was tickled to death to get out of it. And his wasn't the only case. It's just an example of how desperate people were at that time to make a little money. And I would say over the whole period of time that you only had maybe, I'd say 2 or 3% of the people that gave you any trouble. Most of them were straightforward and honest about what they were doing and tried to do the right thing. You had 2 or 3% and you had them every year that you would have those troubles. And you just had to handle them the best way that you possibly could. But at no time did we ever have anybody that was violent or wanted to fight or anything like that. I saw some of my fathers going through it. But those things you tell them now, they're amusing. And you look back on it and you remember about it. And you can see, you can generally see the other fellow's slide of how he felt. And those are just highlights of things that did happen.
So overall, you had a very happy career.
Overall, the career, as far as I'm concerned, was all right. And I liked the work. And I liked it up to the time that I retired. And I enjoyed the work. And it was nothing spectacular that ever happened, I might say. Unless you say we survived the depression and got through it all right. I did have the honor of being elected as the president of the Employees Association of the state of Kentucky for a couple of years and was delegate for the National Convention and also commit to the Executive Committee in the United States, you know.
Mm-hmm. That was an association.
Well, it's still in existence. I'm still a member. Honorary member now, I guess you'd call it. I don't know what else you'd call it.
So briefly, when did you retire and what have you been doing?
I retired in 1972, 22nd day of June, and since that time I've been farming. Mm-hmm. Growing tobacco.
Yeah.
We had 10 acres of tobacco year before last and 10 acres last year, and we have 8 acres this year. Of course, now I don't grow any tobacco at all. But tenants here on the farm to grow. I've got a fellow that's been with me now either 8 or 9 years, and he's hard to beat. He's a good man. I do grow the corn and have around 20 head of cattle here. I take care of those.
Thank you, Mr. Benson.
Well, thank you. I enjoyed talking with you.
Thank you again.